to the First 7-Inch Club, episode 21, because the last episode was a special one. If you haven't listened to the last recording from last week, go back and listen to that. But if you're a normal person and you've been listening to this show, this is the podcast where we look at some old records by old bands that kind of drifted off before they really got started. And we tell you if it's worth your time or not. And I'm Mike, and with me is Scott.
What's your favorite part of the Code Orange video? You can go top three if you want to talk about a lot of it, but you can go top three.
I'm not even gonna pretend. I got like a minute into that video and just shut it off because it was like, it's very Power Man 5000. There was somebody, Brian, I think, posted in the Discord. He posted like a behind the scenes from some guy who was in the video, and he says Code Orange is self-aware, which is I don't understand what that means in 2021 though. Like it's different if you're like if you're like Mucky Pup or something like that. I don't know, I'm old, I don't have a modern reference, but like a Steel Panther, I guess you would say. If you're like Steel Panther, I think it's a little more modern. But if you're like a joke band, that's like okay.
Or if you're a Whopper, you could say Whopper is a joke band that kids would know.
But I think you have to give some warning though. I don't think you can just be like, okay, we're a normal band. but now we are not. Now we are Power Man 5000. This is what's cool now. So yeah, I think I made it to like the singer, ex-drummer singer, dressed like a school shooter doing like Static X faces. And I was like, okay, I'm good.
Whether you're self-aware or not, you're still doing this. It doesn't look like parody. It looks like I said before, like this looks like a moment in like 80s or 90s teen horror movie when they start getting their wishes. And they want to look cool. And so they come to school in like a cool leather jacket and like sunglasses, and it's going to turn badly. That the monkey paw takes and gives and takes. So something's going to go wrong for these guys soon. I'm not taking this ride with them. I don't have any feelings about, I don't even know what you call this, like Vampire Lestat era, like the sexy era of nu metal that came and went for me. I don't even like the good stuff. Like I don't like Nine Inch Nails that much. That would be, I guess, the best, a possible outcome of like a sexy industrial nu metal leather trench coat thing or something like that. And I don't really like that. So this is like, I knew that they were kind of going this direction, but I just didn't think it was going to be this silly.
See, I mean, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. I think this is for whatever new record they're putting out. So maybe for whatever reason, they were like, let's make a video for the joke song on the record. But I don't think that's it, but I'll be optimistic about it. But we're also talking about on the Discord is that back in our day, not even our day, but like 10 years ago, I think if a band made this pivot from like the hardcore roots, they would just get destroyed. They would just like get immolated with hate. And now it's just kind of like there's so much shit going on. It's just like, oh well. And that's no fair. These guys can't get away with this. You have to be punished for this. Like, I don't really know what they're going for. I don't know if they're just like, we're sick of our old fans, or if they're just like, we want to see how far we can go and see if if our old fans will follow us down this path of nostalgic Power Man 5000 music, which again is another thing I brought up in the Discord, is that these dudes are younger than us. I would assume, I actually don't know, but they look younger, and maybe that's their thing. They're just like, we wanted to get famous enough to play nu metal and not be judged for it. And which is weird, because the one time I saw them, they had a and maybe this was a joke too, but they reiterated 10 times during their set that they were a hardcore band, and they kept saying it. And but they're not. I don't think they ever sounded like a hardcore band. But so I don't know if that was a joke, and they've just been jokesters the whole time. We were kind of in a band that was serious but also a joke. So I don't know. Maybe right. They're just huge trolls. I don't really know. I don't know what their deal is.
So when they were telling you they were a hardcore band, did they say we're a hardcore band, or did they say we're a hardcore band?
they said it right. They said it right, I believe.
All right. I'll give it to them.
But I'm going to follow this story closely and see what their new record sounds like. Yeah. If it's just all this, or this was a joke song, or what. Because, there are bands that sincerely did this, and they were self-aware, but they didn't want us to know. Like, No Warning pretty much made a nu metal record. And in retrospect, it wasn't as bad, but American Nightmare tried to switch up their sound. you know, there's a lot of VOD even. They even switched it up a little to be a little more nu metal-y. So who knows? This might be self-aware, might not be.
When I watched the video and that big Mongo bassist of theirs is like really barking along with the chorus and is like way into it, something about that makes me mad. Like, I want the band to be begrudgingly playing this song. Like, all right, we're going to play his nu metal song, then we'll get back to our other stuff. And instead, the whole band is like barking like they're fucking into it. And I'm like, man, I don't want to see you be this happy about what I'm seeing right now.
But speaking of, which we just mentioned, is Whopper. Last week, if you guys haven't listened to, it's mostly Scott. I had a little doing with it. But a couple weeks ago on the show when we reviewed Funeral, we were kind of joking around about how easy it would be to be in a D-beat band. So we did that. We made one in a week, and we put out that record. It's on our podcast feed. If you missed last week, go back and listen to that. Very, very sincerely, speaking of in on the joke, I know there's so many out there. If you run a tape label, if you run a cassette label, hit us up. This is free. You could press this on your silly little tape label. And personally, I mean, I'm sure Scott doesn't care about money either. You could take all the profits. You could take the $80 in profit you'll make from putting this out. But it would just be cool to have a physical release that we don't have to pay for. So,
yeah, let me know somebody liked it. I just want to be witnessed. I want us to be witnessed for what we've done in a couple of days. I mean,
there's a lot of positive comments in the Instagram, but they're already down. We need some strangers to be like, oh, yeah, this rips, man. This is a ripper. Yeah.
I gotta know if it's a ripper. I can't go to bed tonight unless I know if it's a ripper.
Speaking of the Instagram, we finally made it, Scott. We made it. We got our first troll. It was a great feeling for me as a person who is heavily into the internet. It's how I know we're on top, because no one can love you until they hate you, basically. And this guy, it was very confusing to me. I'm not going to read it verbatim, but he chimed in on our candle review. And basically said we know nothing of the San Diego hardcore community scene, which is pretty good, because I'm pretty sure we said that in the episode. But so thanks, Sherlock Holmes. You figured that out. You figured out the mystery. Mystery solved. I think this whole show is about kind of, you know, digging these things up and finding facts for ourselves and talking about them. So I know that's the thing that sucks about how there's like big ass podcasts now that have like sponsors and shit. It's like everybody assumes that a podcast has to be knowledgeable about stuff, and we're not. Maybe we need to put a warning in the beginning that says, hey, you know, we're just guys, we're just using the internet and, you know, some of our personal experiences to flesh this out, but we don't know everything. But the mystery to me is that basically I think trolling is more of a younger person thing. That's a thing young people do. They really seek out that they want to fucking target somebody and fuck their day up. And I'm first off, I'm too old. I don't care. You can say whatever you want about me on the internet. It doesn't matter. It's I am from a different generation where that shit just rolls off my back. But the insults he used were very old man-esque, though. So that's why I was thrown off, because he said we're in our parents' basement, which is weird, because he listened enough to the show. I say I'm old like seven times per episode, man. Like, it's not a joke. So so I don't know. I just want to say, hey, man, if you're a young kid, you're a young troll, I like your energy. Keep it up. Your life will get better at some point, and you won't need to do this. But if you are an older person, I'm sorry that your life never got better, and you're still doing this.
Well, we do ourselves a disservice by not doing like a really full-on intro.
Yeah.
Because I always do this. This is my fault. I always assume I have a small audience who's been with me for the whole ride and that I can keep building. Mm-hmm. And so I don't tell you what I did yesterday. I don't really like to do that. And I don't want to. I don't want to break character even now. But you should probably know if you're listening now, this show is borderline parody. Like, this show is like,
yeah.
I mean, we said early on, and then we kind of let it fade, that we're not qualified. We're just, we just want to do this, but we're not any insiders. We were there for it.
Yeah.
But I've said every episode so far, I didn't pay attention to that. And I didn't pay attention to this. And I was doing that. I really paid attention to about eight things total for 20 years. And I'm going back now and kind of like fucking with it now. But it's for fun. It's a joke. We did a whole fast food podcast for 80 something episodes or something, or 70 something episodes before this. We're not insiders there either. We were literally just going to Taco Bell, eating it, and then coming back and saying, hey, did you eat that? Yeah, I ate it.
It's cool. Like I said, man, young people, they need to be experts in everything. They can't just like something. They have to know everything. So that's, again, what makes me think it's a younger person. But yeah, and today I was listening to that Demo Listen podcast that I mentioned. And they just put out the Kong Kong cassette, which is a band that a listener of the show, Sawyer, put me onto this year, which is probably my favorite discovery of the year. And so I just got that in the mail. But anyways, yeah, Demo Listen, they're much meaner than us. Well, I don't know. You be the judge out there. I don't know. Maybe they're not much meaner than us, but I feel like they are. And they have like a big intro kind of explaining their deal. And after the second time I heard it, I was like, I don't really need to know. Like, you kind of get the gist of this. But now I understand why they have that, because they're very mean. And they need to have that right in the beginning to be like, listen, we're not experts. We're just listening to a song and giving you, you know, how we feel in that moment. So yeah, that's I will, my bad, Mr. Troll. I will come up with a professional intro. Hopefully that we'll have by next episode, where, you know, I'll put all the warnings up that maybe if you are listening to something or want to listen to something where you want to hear experts talk, this is not for you, I don't think.
We're probably experts on something. Let's be experts on Oi now that you're into Oi. Yeah.
We're going to be the America's foremost Oi podcast. We're going to be the Oi experts. Maybe that's going to be our next release next time we can't record. Is an Oi record.
You took the words right out of my mouth, Mike. You took that. I was literally going to say the same thing.
Yeah, there we go. We got our next release. Speaking of moments, though. I think a few weeks ago, we have a lot on top before we intro this record. But don't worry, it's a two song record. We're going to be in and out real quick. But, you know, a few episodes ago, I put out the call that, hey, if you listen to the show and you're in a band, send your shit around and we'll talk about it for a minute. And Todd from a band, this was many years ago, he was in a band called Moments, has been a longtime listener. He listened to Kissing Contest. I assume he listened to Border Boss 1.0 too. So he's been a longtime listener. So I'm, of course, going to talk about his old band Moments from, they're from Australia and,
Canberra.
They're from, 2004. From 2007, he reached out. He said, hey, man, just, check out our shit. Let me know what you think. Before I get into that, though, I also want to reach out. Listener Jeff hit us up in the Facebook, which I check once a week. And, so I replied to his 5-day old reply saying he'd send us a record, and then I messaged him, and it hasn't been my weekly checkup on Facebook, so I don't know if he got back to us. But yes, Jeff, check your Facebook messages. I sent you my address if you'd still like to send that record. Thank you. But the Moments is they're from Australia, from 2004 2007, and I'll tell you what, I didn't know what to expect. This is on Bandcamp at hellosquare.bandcamp.com. I assume Moments is taken because it's a very common word. And this is very much early to mid 2000s screamo, but what I like about it is that it's kind of in the middle. It's not quite, I guess, the big label for the underground stuff back then was Level Plane. It's not quite like Level Plane screamo, but it's not quite like EVR Rise Records screamo. It's kind of like, just depending on what kind of shirts these guys wore to a show would decide what kind of screamo category were they in. Because this was, I think, you know, these were the last few years of screamo being pure until EVR became like a fucking adult contemporary, like Starbucks music generator for bands for some reason, which was a weird turn. But, then like, you know, I think any kind of like heartfelt screamo stopped in the mid 2000s. And then now it's kind of just like started over, where the screamo bands now sound like the screamo bands from the 80s and 90s again. So it's kind of like cycling again. But so these guys were on the, I think, you know, the last legs of true original screamo. I like their singer. His singer sounds a lot like the guy from Curl Up and Die. I don't know if that's on purpose. I think it's kind of I wouldn't say a common voice, but I think you could only have X amount of types of voices in this music. So, but I'm a big fan of Curl Up and Die. So I like that. Some of the songs a little too long. Don't need that. But hey, what are you going to do? I complain about song length a lot, although I always want these 7 inches to be filled with 15 minutes worth of music. So kind of a hypocrite, but
there's a sweet spot.
There's definitely a sweet spot, but overall, no, I like this. I would have definitely listened to this back in the day. I'm not going to pretend I'm going to listen to it now, because it's on Bandcamp and I hate Bandcamp. I wish Spotify was Bandcamp, basically. It's a lot more convenient to use. I buy stuff on Bandcamp and then I just it's just like burning money because I never go back to listen to it. But no, check out Moments if you miss that kind of early 2000s screamo sound, like the most polished screamo before, like I said, before it became coffee house music, basically. It's a hit in my book. But what did you think, Scott?
I admire that they lead off this compilation with a song where the singer is totally cooked.
That was probably their I was thinking that too. That was probably their last song they ever recorded. That's the vibe I got from that.
And it's the it's kind of like the best produced song too, so it's the best foot forward. But his voice gets cooked in exactly the same way mine does. Like a lot of people get awesomer, like they get more hoarse and kind of like raspy and like they might get out of breath, but they kind of still stay on the same like trajectory. Not me. I'm like this guy. It starts to chirp and squawk and beep, like all kinds of other things happen. So I love it. I love that this guy and me are we're a world apart, but so close together. I guess this is a lot of this has kind of like a Midwest emo thing going on, like the Clinky Cleans. Mm-hmm. And this is the kind of thing where I would love to just, and he can even just tell us, just tell me in Instagram or something like that. Like, how did you get here? How did you get there?
Like, I have no idea how the scene or how hardcore or how anything works in Australia. And I'm curious how a band in the mid 2000s ends up sounding kind of like screamo Braid.
Yeah, yeah.
The only complaint I would have is you could drop the needle all over on this record and it's kind of always the same key. Mm-hmm. A lot of the bands that I think led to this sound would sometimes bust that, sometimes have a little bit of a poppier part, or sometimes have a little bit of an angrier part. And these guys are always just on that on that one sad chord almost the entire compilation. But it's good. Like it's what I like. I love screaming. And I love distorted guitars, and I like drama, like dramatic music, and these guys go for all that. So not bad. And I'm also surprised that Todd from Moments was a literal username. I was thinking it was like an existential thing, like I'm Todd from the Moments of your day, or I'm Todd from like the Moments of the universe. No, he's Todd from the band named Moments. Oh, okay. I get it.
Okay, we're already 20 minutes deep into this one. Yeah. Ooh, now my voice is spent. I've been talking too much now. One more quick thing before we get into the actual record. It's next week is Thanksgiving. I don't think it's going to affect our podcast at all because we record on Mondays usually, but the holidays are usually a pretty dicey time for me and podcasts. So you might be only getting a couple a month. I don't know. I don't know what Scott's schedule's like, but... don't cry too much if you only get like a couple more podcasts until the beginning of next year, because holidays are always dicey. Okay, I guess we could finally talk about this record. It's a band called Far Cry. It's a 7-inch called Much Time Spent Waiting on TPOS Records from 1991, although it was recorded in 1990. This band was, I believe, only around from about 1990 to 1991. They weren't around for a long time. They're not a first 7-inch. They're their third. They had three releases in a very short time. This is their second 7-inch. Their first 7-inch was called Story of Life, which was on Crucial Response Records. And they had a cassette EP that was also on TPOS. And when I was reading their discography, I just kind of... just ignored that because I saw cassette and I assumed it was some weird comp, but no, they had like a full ass cassette. I assume like some kind of demo. It seems to be very rare to find, but otherwise this was their last 7-inch. So this is the last 7-inch club. And that's about it there. I think they are most famously known for the descriptors on Discogs are all over the place. If you go to their main site, it says American hardcore punk band. If you go to the 7-inch, it says emo hardcore. And I think if you go to the other 7-inch, it says punk rock. So this was kind of a mystery for me. I wasn't aware of this band beforehand. I'll get into that in the personal section. But I guess the most notable thing about this band is a man by the name of Ken Olden is in it. And he is kind of a hardcore lifer. This was his first band. And he's gone on to be in Battery, Damnation AD. I guess he probably filled in for Youth of Today on their tour. He was in When Tigers Fight, Worlds Collide, Fort Knox. He was in many, many bands. He was in a lot of bands that I assume if they're not still active, they're probably just doing reunion shows every other week. So I assume he's still down for the cause. So he's the most famous, easily accessible member. Ken played drums on this record, but I think he's a multi-talented person. I think he's fucking done everything on a record at some point in his life. So then Todd Rancic, who was the singer, he was in a band called Gravel, which was an early Jade Tree band that I kind of vaguely remember. And he's in another early Jade Tree band called Eidolon, which I have no clue, never heard of them. And then he was also in, for some reason, all these bands were very early 90s. And then he took many years off. And then 2004, he played some instrument on Touch X Down 7-inch, which, I mean, it sounds like a name I would know, but they only had one 7-inch. So maybe we'll have a sequel to Ta's discography, and we'll talk about Touch X Down. Who knows what that could sound like? I don't know. I'm clueless. It seems the other two guys... I don't know if Mr. Troll wants to inform us, because I only go by Discogs and, you know, he seems to know everything. But Matt and Paul seem to have gotten out of the scene quick, and their Discogs is basically not a thing. And they might not have even been on the first Far Cry 7-inch. These guys might have just been, I think they were, judging by how close these guys seem in their promo pic. I assume they were a band for this very short time, but yeah, what interests me is I think they were only around from 1991. This was recorded in early 90, so I have a feeling they just had like one recording session and somehow split it into three different records, but I don't really know the truth. But either way, Scott, did you dig up anything else that's interesting?
I finally went through and listened to all of Ken's other bands. Like, I've known about all of them, but I didn't really put together that there was a through line, that there was one guy who kind of made them all connected. He always plays guitar the same way, and it's really noticeable. It's like this really like tight, like he's rubbing his thumbs on the strings at all times. It's really, he's always hitting the pig squeals. He's like, and it's not bad. He's good. I mean, he's like a good guitarist. He's like accurate and precise, but he kind of like, he plays with his pick directly on his thumb on the string the whole time, and he gets a really skittery little thrash guitar sound. I would never have put all this together. And now I'm listening to all the bands at once. I'm like, oh my God, he always does that. He always does that. And also, he always gets in bands with this kind of vocalist. Like, a lot of his bands have these kind of like Ray Capo-y, kind of like sort of shouty, but soft shouty singers. Yeah. Like a lot, I think Damnation AD is the only one that kind of breaks the mold. That guy's kind of shouty. But a lot of the bands he was in, I always thought Worlds Collide and Damnation AD were supposed to be like super ultra heavy. Like, you know, like I can't even think of anything that would be what was in my mind, just like really deathy, heavy stuff or something like that. And yeah, no, not at all. I'm finally going back and listening to all these bands. I think he's a really good player. It's very funny. It's very funny to go through his whole discography in one day and go like, wow, look at this guy. And back to C. Todd Rancic, like C. Thomas Howell, C. Everett Koop. Does anybody other than C's do that? Is there like a it's always C. Yeah. Eidolon, worth looking at.
Okay.
Only because the record, like this layout is something, we'll get to that. But the Eidolon record looks like the software that comes bundled with your Gateway PC. Like it looks like the instructions for your spreadsheet software or something like that. And I fucking love it. I really, really like it. And the album,
it looks like a school textbook.
And the album is really weird. The album, I don't think I've ever heard anything like that album. It sounds like it's like hardcore, like post-hardcore, but influenced by like the 80s to 90s that you don't really remember that much, like The Cure and The Cult, like some sort of, you know, like The Chameleons, like one of those kind of goth, like big name goth bands. Like, obviously people still know The Cure. I misspoke there a little bit, but just, you don't think of that when you think of 80s necessarily. These guys do that. It's really slick, really produced, really kind of atmospheric goth 90s, like early 90s sound, something like that, but also post-hardcore. I've never heard anything like, same vocals though. He sings the same way in every band that he's ever been in that I can find. So he's really got a lane.
Chicago's own Vic Bondi was also in this band from Articles of Faith.
Yeah.
This band, Eidolon, they started in 1991, so that's going to probably answer one of my questions later on. So that's pretty good to know. I will check that out, though. I guess TPOS Records is a record label that is still around to this day and is been around forever since I was a tiny, tiny child. I think their first release is in 1984, and let me just read their thing. So they're started by Malcolm Tent in Florida in 1984 as a vehicle for the release of his debut record by his band Broken Talent, which I vaguely remember. but I'll get into that. TPOS then relocated itself to Danbury and operated from the record and clothes store, Trash American Style, which I remember from when I lived in Connecticut. And that's about it. And he's still putting out weird shit to this day.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know. It's like stuff people know. Like, this guy is responsible. If you ever got like a 17th generation dub of a Charles Manson record or tape, this is the guy who put it out originally. Like, he was the original guy to be like, I'm gonna press this Charles Manson tape and sell it. And he did that with like a lot of weirdos. Like, he did David Koresh and I think a few other fucking weirdos, but this is the
Heaven's Gate.
Heaven's Gate, he's responsible for all that shit. Charles Manson, Jim Jones, and then he's put out like a lot of seminal Connecticut stuff. Like, I think he put out 76% Uncertain, which was like the first kind of known outside of Connecticut punk band way before my time. But yeah, I guess so. I guess 1990 wasn't that way before my time, but way before my time. Oh no, I guess he only put out one thing by them, and all their old stuff was put out by other all stuff. So, but yeah, and he put, and there's like a bunch of other like names that I remember from, you know, when I was very, very small. Like I said, like the fucking whatever, the first thing I said, the Broken Talent is like a band I would see their name around, and Bunny Brain sounds kind of familiar. And there was just like he's put out some anti-scene stuff. So he's been around. The Dismay demo, which was definitely in my era. It seems now he's putting out more like a lot of his newer releases are Lathes, which is like, I think that's when you like fire up your creepy crawlers kind of fucking science kit and like, and just make one copy of a record. So I don't know if you could really put that on Discogs, but I think he probably punches in his own Discogs. So, but he's put out like a lot of Lathes and Connects cassettes, but he's still around, man. Fucking almost 40 years now. This dude's been putting shit out. So good for him. That's a long fucking time for any type of label, especially a punk and hardcore label. So I give it up to TPOS, even though I've known of many of the bands on the label, but outside of being like a little creep and getting like the Charles Manson tape and stuff and Jim Jones and stuff like that, I didn't really celebrate the music side of his record label.
Have you listened to a lot of like cult record, like Cult Leader records and Serial Killer records? Have you listened to all that shit?
I mean, yeah, when I was a kid, and you know, it's like, yeah, this is cool, but yeah, not past the age of like 18 or anything.
I only hear it as sample, like on a Deicide record or something. of a sample.
Well, Charles Manson had real music, so it was like, oh, this is cool, man. It's like music, but it sucked. Like, all his music fucking sucked, but it's like you could listen to it and not be too much of a creep, I guess.
This label's Discogs is awesome, though. I love looking through this list. It's nothing. It's like, it's been 20 years since I looked through a record bin like this. You know, like since I was at Rhino Records and like carefully not buying all the G.G. Allin and, you know, other like...
Yeah.
You know, like it sounds bad the way I'm putting it, but it gave me like, this is like a real nostalgic feeling. I was like, man, I really haven't flipped through this kind of a record bin in a long, long time. All these unlovable punk adjacent, like ballpoint pen album covers, you know, Serial Killer records and all that nonsense. The record box, there used to just be like a section of a record store that said punk and it would be packed with stuff like this.
Yep.
I would never even take most of this stuff to the listening booth, let alone buy it. But I was—it was like weird. It was fun to see it. It was fun to flip through it and go, "Yeah, I mean, this is stupid. I'm not going to buy it." The later stuff that he's putting out now. So he's probably listening, by the way. And guess what?
For sure.
Label Whopper is probably coming out on, because what most of the stuff he's putting out now is just this opportunist shit. So the reason he has a whole bunch of King Gizzard albums is because King Gizzard is like an open source. They say they let anybody put out their record.
Huh.
So if you can get a hold of the recording, you're allowed to put it out in any format. So he does like 8-track tapes and reel to reels and all these weird formats of the King Gizzard albums. And he's probably got some sort of market cornered for Oddball, because they're a weird band to begin with. Yeah. And they probably have weird fans. So he's definitely going to grab the MP3 of our record.
We're good. Man, hit us up. You have a well-curated Discogs. You're definitely vanity searching TPOS records. So when you hear this podcast, let us know.
We're good.
Put out the Whopper. Ultra Bunny, that was his band too. They were like big. I think they're known. I forgot. I wanted to know one of the bands he put out in 2017, Thor and the Ass Boys. And the name of the 7-inch was Shit the Pants and Other Favorites, which is a great name. I'm going to probably be checking out Thor and the Ass Boys after this.
I assume his name, because there's a lot of albums by him on the label too.
Yes, yes.
That's a stage name, right? Malcolm Tent. Malcontent.
I didn't think about that. Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah.
So that's the reason, like, you know this guy. You grew up in his neighborhood. You know, you just don't know if you don't know him by his stage name. That's all.
I assume, like, I don't know. I assume maybe he's the guy who owned Trash 2. I can't remember. It's been years. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that makes sense. I think he is the guy who owned Trash. So I might have talked to this guy at some point in my life. But the personal, outside of the personal side of growing up in Connecticut, I don't have any attachment to this band. Basically, I saw this. This was another, like, cathartic thing that I had to do, because I saw this, I believe, on Nate's Discogs at Crypto Comics, and it was just a blank cover in a stock font, and I was like, oh, this is a mystery, I'm going to pick this up. And then, so I did, and then it was like one of those things, like, when you hear a word for the first time, and then it's like, it's the word was already there, and you just, every day you hear it once a day now, that word that you never heard before. And it's the same thing with this record, where I think I've been to two Chicago record stores, like, right after I bought this record, and saw this record in two different Chicago record stores, which, you know, these guys were from Maryland, and this record label is from Connecticut, and it's weird that something like this would end up in Chicago, but it did. And I was like, that's weird that I've never seen or heard of this record in my life, and all of a sudden now it's just popping up everywhere, and I still wasn't moved to bring it up and review it, just because the cover was so boring. And it was just on one of the on our Instagram at First 7-Inch Club, all letters, if you'd like to follow. One of the accounts I follow on there is Life Love Shirts, which is this European dude who owns every single shirt that was ever released by a hardcore band in the last, you know, 400 years or whatever. Just every single one, he has them. And there is a picture of the first show that Supertouch ever played. And the guy's wearing a Far Cry shirt, and he had a post about Far Cry, and he's like, they're an underrated band from the 90s and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, so this band isn't a complete unknown weirdo band.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a waste of time. Like, somebody else actually knows this band. Underrated, that's up for debate. That's that's a thing you say when you know of a band that other people don't know of. You just say, they're underrated. But, you know, that's up for debate. But either way, so it's just, this is just one of those things where I felt like I needed to get it off my chest after it was mentioned on Life Love Shirts. Maybe, you know, people are Googling, like, oh, I gotta find out more about this Far Cry, and they'll stumble upon this, along with the TPOS, along with Malcolm, they'll stumble upon our podcast, and you know, we'll get famous. So here we are. That's why we're talking about Far Cry.
You know, in doing some of this research, I saw their name being used as the pivot point on some things, like, oh, it's this guy from Far Cry, or like, this is a new album from this guy from Far Cry. I'm like, wow. So so to somebody, this name was a hammer at some point.
So I guess we could just get into this layout, or lack thereof, for this record. So this is 1990. This was even before my time. We're not going to be talking about many records before my time, but this is one of them. And I'm not going to dog these guys for this or anything, but this is basically, like, they did this in a word processing program. This is just a black cover with a white stock font, like a Times New Roman. It's kind of stretched out a little. I don't know if that's an actual font or they stretched it out, but, and that's all it is, the cover. It just says Far Cry, much time spent waiting, white lettering on black. And then the back is like, they got a little more crazy, and they, like, put in, like, a bold strike through line, like an asterisk. They try to doll it up with some asterisks and spacing out letters here and there and stuff like that, but it's still just like a word processing program. And I get it, man. It's a long time ago, a very long time ago. And it has the lyrics on the back, and they did have enough Cayunes to credit C. Todd Raznick as the layout and designer, which is I don't know, man. I don't know if you want this on your resume, but maybe you do. Maybe this is your style. You did that other record that looks like a textbook, so maybe you did do that. And this also comes with a one sheet of typed out. I think it's photocopied. I don't think this is. No, yeah, I think this is photocopied, but it's typed out. The first section of it is about the Persian Gulf, and it's a lot of words about the Persian Gulf and the media and stuff like that. And I'm not going to get into it. It's a lot. It's the same shit we're putting up with now, basically. It hasn't changed. Shit hasn't changed. And then after that is like a little like catalog section of their releases that you could buy at the time. $3.50 postage paid would get you these records. And yeah, it's Violent Children was another band I was trying to think of from my past that I would see brought up a lot. They put out like Wide Awake stuff. A a comp with Verbal Assault, Sloppy Seconds, GG Allen, Urge Overkill, and Vatican Commandos. That is quite a myriad of bands there. But yeah, this is, you know, it's a, this is nothing on this little one sheet is anything I particularly care about that much. As far as nostalgia goes, but it's cool to have something like this, to have just like some guy was just like, I'm going to type this shit out. And he seems like he's still putting out weird shit. So I don't doubt that you're still getting stuff like this in TPOS releases, but that's it. It's not a very notable layout. They sprung for an actual record label that has like a design on it. So there's that. There's like a, I don't know, it looks like almost a woodblock print of a man looking up into the sky as if there is a UFO above him or something. But outside of that, that's about it.
That picture looks really familiar, but I couldn't unearth where it's from. Mm-hmm. First of all, TPOS Records has a lot of logos, and they're all great. they all have this kind of KTEL vibe, or like a local news radio station or something like that. Whoever, if Malcolm 10 is making them, he's a visionary. I love his logo style. And I love this layout. I'm not afraid to say it. I love the layout of this record. It's
okay.
Yeah, I mentioned the Adelon record. We talked about that. That's better. But yeah, like this. Not just the word processor, but this definitely was done on a word processor that just came free with your computer. Like it was just the built-in. And in 1990, the stuff that came free with the computer sucked. It wasn't like now when you bought. When you went to CompUSA and you bought the thing that had like not even Windows, it had some other OS on it that they knocked out in a few weekends. There's some WordPerfect. You dream about WordPerfect. You were using a PC Paint Shop or something like that.
Yeah.
But you could tell that he wanted this to look like a Swans record or something. Like it was definitely trying to look bold, the way it's written, and the fade asterisk isolate thing on the inside is so bad and so good. Like he tried to. He's trying to do something. The spacing is all bad. Like he just couldn't get it right. And maybe it was hard to do in whatever software he was using. I'm going to subtract points for the squish fonts. It's still not okay. It's still not okay to squish fonts. One of the reprints has a really normal, like Youth Crew looking cover.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a shame. If you have a choice, please hold out for the real deal. Cause it is definitely Times New Roman as a motherfucker. This is, it's worth having it in this format.
Okay, I guess we can get into the music then. This is only a 2-track 7-inch. It's very short, very quick. The first side A, is the song called Fade. Do what you do to give up the chance to try. You look at the world. We live in the past, regretting the past will last. If you should fade away, I should laugh. It's been much time spent waiting. It's been much time spent waiting. It's been much time spent waiting. It's been much time waiting for you. Waiting for you. For you. Will I fall? I've seen this pain coming. Never would this go right for a while. Inside, it's been a long time coming. You picked me up, then cut me off, and now I fall. Inside, by my side. And so I listened to this without really digging into anything before I actually listened. So the first vibe I got, I listened to this, and this is definitely wrong because they obviously had other records before this, but it sounded like if like a college rock band entered a contest where they had to make a record that sounded hardcore, and they didn't really have like much to go on. Like they listened to like Youth of Today and Gorilla Biscuits, and they were like, okay, well. I guess this is what we're doing. So it has like a weird sound. Then I was like, okay, well that's not the case because this guy was, you know, he was in many bands. And then I was like, maybe they're just at different stages of hardcore involvement because it is 1990. Like I mean, when I started going to shows, there was like 700 people in the world that went to shows. Like, it wasn't like this big fucking thing. So, you know, finding enough people in a band in your area was just hard enough. So, so I was thinking, you know, like the bassist, definitely hardcore guy. He's playing all the hits on the bass. The singer, no, I don't think the singer wanted to be in a hardcore band. And now that I know he was in that Eidolon band and then later Gravel, that makes sense. I don't think he ever had real big dreams of being Ray Capo, even though he kind of was trying to mimic him, I guess. The drummer sounds like that's Ken. So he ended up being the hardcore lifer, but there's a lot of flourish. There's like a lot of flair that I don't think you would get in that early hardcore, that he's hitting a lot of cymbals. He's really enjoying himself. but you know, it just turns out he just really loves hardcore. I think, I don't think he had bigger aspirations. The guitarist was the wild card. I can't tell, if that's on purpose, what the guitarist is doing or not. I don't know. That's the wild card. But after like looking at their promo picture, I just think they were going for something different. I would classify this, I guess, as melodic hardcore. And there was Turning Point was basically breaking up when these guys were starting. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if that was really influence for them, but I don't really know any other melodic hardcore bands before Turning Point. Sorry, somebody out there can probably correct me because I'm sure they existed. But I mean, to me, Turning Point was the first big one that everybody knew of around the country. And so that's the only like kind of source I could think for this. So I don't know. This could have just been like, hey guys, we're going to start a band and it's going to sound weird because the singer doesn't want to shout. And you know, I don't know. It's just kind of a weird sound. It has like it does the brave move of the 7-inch is called Much Time Spent Waiting. And there's I guess what you'd call the chorus of the song is him saying, I spent much time spent waiting. And he says it over and over again. But the song is called Fade. That's very ballsy to say much time spent waiting that much and just not actually use that as the name of the song. they play. So it's I guess I would say the beginning of this song, like the first big part of the song, would technically fall under the hardcore umbrella just because of how hard the bassist is going on just the bass sound and just fucking all the bass parts. But you change that bass up and, you know, change a few other things and you have like a totally different genre. But then they just were like, I don't think this is hardcore enough. We're going to play a fast hardcore part. And now, you know, in retrospect, this is the most stock fast hardcore part you're ever going to hear. 1990, I'm not so sure. There was only so many hardcore parts people knew of. So I'm not going to reprimand them for that because, you know, there wasn't that many that existed. So they were just like, we got to play the hardcore part. It goes on for a little too long. It goes on for way too long, I would say. It just keeps going, basically, for such a kind of stock part. And then I think it goes into the other part again, and then it wraps up. It's a very interesting song. It's I don't hate it. I actually like this song a lot. It's definitely as simple as this music is. It's probably like the most quizzical song I've come across for a 7-inch club, just because it's like such a weird, odd sound that, I mean, maybe Scott will school me and he'll know 7 bands that sounded like this, but it's just with the singer and the bassist and then everything else that's going on, and I don't know. It's just a very weird, unique sound to me. But what do you think, Scott?
It was pretty ballsy for this song to show up sounding like Shelter at the beginning. Because I have said on this very show, I don't like Shelter that much. So how dare you? And then at 120, there's a blast beat for a long time. Mm-hmm. That's normal these days. The blast beats aren't like that exotic anymore. But I was just sitting there listening to it and thinking, I don't think I've ever heard a Youth Crew album with a blast beat.
That's just a fast hardcore part. I don't think that's like a blast beat.
And no, it's a double bass. Listen to it again. It's a fucking blast beat. You don't need the double bass. That's not a blast beat. Blast beat is when you the snare is on the one, the kick is on the two, and you do it a lot and you do it quick. That's a blast beat. But either way, it's got this kind of floating sound because the riffs aren't that fast and they kind of float on top of it. And it just sounded weird. Like, I don't think I've heard anything like that from this era. And there was fast hardcore back then for sure. There was like, you know, Septic Death and there's like plenty of like thrashcore back then that was doing this. I don't think I've ever heard a poppy sound, like a poppy sound, you know, like an almost indie rock sounding hardcore band doing that. And it just caught me by surprise. I was like, this is strange. This is strange to hear this for, and it's for a big chunk of the song. And then when they kind of come out of it, They kind of do a lot of almost like trippy guitar stuff on top, almost like some of the psychedelic hardcore bands that are out in the later 2000s, like Piss Jeans and Fucked Up and stuff like that. They kind of do it on this. I don't think anyone was doing that either. I'm telling on myself by saying I've never heard any of this stuff before. Maybe someone was doing this, but I don't know. I don't think I'd ever heard anybody really doing this. I think it sounds cool. And then when they get to the end, they kind of lean on the chorus for longer than you'd expect, and it gets kind of like as trippy as you can get in about 30 seconds. It's only 30 seconds, so it's not that crazy, but it gets a little bit hypnotic, and it kind of hit a nerve. And I just am starting to think might be a good record. This might be an okay record. I mean, you don't get much of it, but from the beginning of the song, I was not going to go there. And then by the end of the song, I was like, yeah, that was actually, just like you said, that was an unexpected mini experience.
Yeah. So it has that vibe of like a band that's not a hardcore band that has to be forced to play hardcore. The second side B is a song called Isolate. This is, I guess, Scott's ruining my life and saying this is not a fast hardcore part. It's a blast beat. Mm-hmm. I was thinking this song started off with a more traditional hardcore part because it has that same blast beat again. But it's, they're like, we got to start the song off. This is our hard song. And so it starts off with that part. But the singer still does not sound committed to it. He's putting even more flourishes into his singing on the song. Like, so you know he doesn't. This is not his jam. Like, he doesn't want to do this, but he's still doing it. He's still going along with the flow. There's a lot of singing along, and again, I think the singing along sounds cool, the sing alongs, but it's very robotic. It's again very much like, hey man, we gotta write a hardcore record, and we only have these two records to go by. They do sing alongs on them, so we gotta do a sing along because it's very, I don't know. There's no passion in it. It's just like, but it's cool. I think it sounds cool, but it's definitely jarring, the sing-alongs in this. And then it goes into kind of a more traditional, again, traditional hardcore gallop. And even that's a little off. Like, it's definitely, maybe the guitarist is the black sheep of the Far Cry that was not really down with the shit. Maybe it was him all along, because it's a gallop part, but it's definitely like, I don't know, it's a proto gallop maybe. But that's it. It's not as long as the first track. It's not as good as the first track. But in the end, it leaves me wanting more. And I was like, oh, I'll go listen to all the rest of their stuff, which I haven't done. But then I was like, oh, wait.
Try. Like, you can't find it. I tried. You can't find any of it. No.
Oh, that sucks. Well, I think that cassette is No Hope. And I'm sure I could find the 7-inch. But yeah, outside of that, I mean, they only had like four or five more songs. So I don't know. But it's just, this seems like a very strange way to end a band on this note, because it's just such a strange recording. I got to check out that Eidolon, because it seems like that started right after this band, and maybe that'll clue me in. But yeah, what do you think of this song, Scott?
Okay, two things. Not to get too guitar for the practicing musician, but drums aren't the only instrument that can be rushed. And this opening guitar riff is like, this is something that I used to struggle with when I was younger too, is like note duration. Like it sounds like he's not playing the riff right. You need to hold those notes out a little bit longer. And so it's like that whole intro kind of just stumbles. Like, it just sounds like they're tripping over the riff a little bit. You hate to see it. Then the other thing is that the singer sings a couple lines a little more melodically. Like, is it? Yeah. Sounds like the Donuts. I was listening to it. I was like, that sounds like the Donuts. Wouldn't that be weird to discover the Donuts were influenced by Far Cry? And we're just figuring that out right now. So yeah, they get to the faster part and it's good. It's cool. Not quite as good as the first track, I think. I don't think the sort of faster part floats quite as magically. it's like I said about the Disgust record last episode. Yeah, one song was good. Two songs? Okay. I think I could see my way clear to maybe three tracks of moody DC hardcore played at warp speed before I really detect the recipe. But like you said, with the vocals, this is like the Great British Bake Off. This is the technical challenge. They had a sheet that said you need gang vocals. And they were all like looking at each other like, what's a gang vocal? And so they did it. They did their best.
And that's it. That's this record. It's very quick. And I can't believe we're wrapping up this. I thought this was going to be 2 hours the way we started this podcast, but it seems like we're hitting the sweet spot. But yeah, overall, my rating system is throw it in the trash, buy it in the bargain bin, buy it for full price, or buy it for those collector prices. And I got to say, I bought this for pretty cheap. I think this was a buck or two. I think even in the record stores I saw, it was pretty cheap. I'm pretty sure there's still copies on Discogs for a buck or two. And so I was like, I bet the first 7-inch, I bet that's the one that's like $40 because it's on Crucial Response, which is like a notable hardcore record label. And it's the first one. So I looked that one up and that one's $2 too. So I guess it just never happened for Far Cry. They were never a band anybody cared about. But I'm going to say Discogs, all these people out there, they're really discrediting this band. This is a very unique, weird record. I'm not going to go full collector prices because it's only two songs and the second song isn't really amazing. But just for that first song alone, I'm going to say you should pay at least $5 for this record. If you see this for $5, don't even think twice about it. This is a real moment in time. Just a very head scratching track on this. It's great. Everybody should check this out.
I don't remember if I played the show or just attended it then, because probably my friend Tom might have played it. Either I played it or my friend Tom played it. But once I saw these bands on tour named iFarm and Thirsty. Mm-hmm. And they played really, really fast pop punk. And I'd never seen anything like that before. And I don't like pop punk. I still don't like pop punk. But seeing it played at warp speed was fun. And like, I've never heard like poppy music played at like almost black metal speeds like that. And I was like, I didn't totally mind it at the time. I mind it now. I think I don't really want to hear a whole lot more. I think I have limits. I think that these guys did it. They did two tracks of it. It's proof of concept. Maybe you can go somewhere with it. Maybe you can't. But, two slim little tracks of, you know, youth crew hardcore with a fast part in the middle. If that worked, it's good. You did it. You did the job. Don't do any more. You can't get any further than that. I think at that point, it's kind of like it's like a thrashcore band wearing a youth crew mask. So I'm going to give this 3.5 Gorilla Biscuits masks on the guy from Siege, out of five.
That's pretty good.
Which would be a sight to see.
So there you go. That's our episode for this week. We'll hopefully be back next week. Again, I said it's Thanksgiving week. I don't think I have any big plans for Monday, so hopefully we'll be talking to you next week. Check out the Whopper band, the Whopper EP from last episode if you haven't. Tell your friends who run cassette labels to put out the Whopper EP. Let them know. If you want to find us on Instagram for 7-inch Club, if you want to find us on YouTube to hear these songs and not with people not talking over them, it's also for 7-inch Club, for 7-inch Club at gmail.com if you need to reach out to us privately, I guess. But yeah, until then, we'll talk to you next week.
I would say don't listen to the last episode. Wait until it comes out on TPOS Records.
Yeah.
On a Viewmaster or a pop rocks, where whatever you call this pop.
Oh, Hit Clip.
Hit Clip. When it's on Hit Clip, you'll hear how I truly intended Whopper to sound.